to South Sudan in Focus on The Voice of America. I'm John Tanza, working from home on this pre-recorded program via remote. Here are some of the stories we are covering today, Tuesday, May 4th, 2021. Three people were attacked and killed by a pastoralist in Lanya County.
A group of armed Mandare cattle keepers went into an area called Lamilikin in Loka of Kenyipayam, raided a number of cattle, killed two innocent people, wounded two others.
And schools have reopened across South Sudan.
All the children in this country must report back to school, girls and boys together.
We'll have these stories and more coming up on South Sudan in Focus. Three people were killed and four others injured in Lanya County of Central Equatoria during an attack by a group of armed pastoralists over the weekend. The commissioner of Lanya County, Emmanuel Kamis, says the governor of Central Equatoria State has put measures in place to ensure cattle keepers leave the area as soon as possible. For VOA News, Winnie Chirino reports from Juba.
Lanya County Commissioner Emmanuel Kamis says armed cattle keepers from Terekeka County attacked people in different parts of the county on Sunday.
A group of armed Mandare cattle keepers went into an area called Lamilikin in Loka of Kenyipayam, raided a number of cattle, killed two innocent people, wounded two others. On the same day, also the same armed Mandare cattle keepers raided a number of cattle, looted household property in Kopera and Wijipayams in particular, and specifically in the Limuro Boma of Wijipayam, they raided cattle, they killed one citizen and injured two others, including an elderly person. Currently, as I speak to you now, the injured are receiving treatment in Yei, while the dead ones have been retrieved from where they were killed, and they have been buried accordingly.
Kamis says the wounded are being treated at Yei Seba Hospital. He says the situation remains tense because armed cattle keepers from Terekeka are still moving from one area to another and looting, harassing and attacking people in various parts of Lanya County, including the Loka, Limiro and Wuji areas. Kamis says he and other state government officials discussed the matter on Monday with Central Equatoria State Governor Emmanuel Adil Anthony, who assured him that state authorities will carry out unspecified actions to ensure that cattle keepers leave the area soon.
In the next 72 hours, appropriate actions will be taken and we will be able to inform the people of South Sudan exactly the impact and what has been taken as an immediate action to address the situation once and for all. It's very clear that we have the order of the president, we have the order of the governor directing these cattle keepers, these armed cattle keepers, to return to their areas. And as the commissioner and the head of local government in Lanya County, is my responsibility to ensure that national and state orders, specifically now the order of the president, the order of the governor, is fully implemented without any negotiation.
Edmond Nyakani, Executive Director for Community Empowerment for Progress Organization, or CEPO, sees cattle raids and revenge attacks are the leading cause of deaths and loss of property in South Sudan on a daily basis. He says cattle raiding, which used to only occur among pastoralist communities, has spread to other parts of the country where communities are predominantly farmers. He says the main problem is that cattle keepers are well-armed and not just ordinary people, but rather generals in the army or politicians who regularly supply ammunition and weapons to the cattle camps. He says there must be political will from the country's leaders to end the problem.
We need to start naming the cattle rightful owners. For example, if we say there's a cattle in Lanya, there's cattle in Magwit, in Nimule, who are the rightful owners, we need to name them. If we name them, then we need to bring their names to the attention of the leadership of the country, because, as I said, most of them are subordinates to a president, whether politically or militarily. So president need to take a personal decision on that in terms of approaching the rightful owners with directives to minimize violence.
Yakani says repeated attacks on farmers by armed cattle keepers could encourage communities to create armed militia groups, something he says could easily escalate into a full-blown war if the government does not intervene.
Tailored disarmament to cattle keepers. And this may happen in the process of, if we are to evacuate cattle camps from one location to another, our state security institutions need to be involved, like military and police, to provide protection and safety, but they have to collect arms out of these hands of the communities. Because one thing that we have over time speaking about it is that people are carrying arms in hand because they feel the state cannot provide them any more safety and protection.
Yakani advises the government to begin treating cattle as a national asset, where cattle will be labeled with trademarks to easily identify the owners of the cattle, so that if a herd of cattle is seen crossing somewhere, the owner can be questioned. President Salva Kiir has issued several decrees ordering cattle keepers to leave Greater Equatoria, but many of those decrees have been all ignored. For VOA News, I am Winnie Serino in Juba.
Primary and secondary schools across South Sudan have reopened nearly a year after they were closed down as part of measures to prevent the spread of COVID-19. South Sudan's vice president in charge of social services cluster and head of the National Task Force for COVID-19, Hussein Abdelbaghi, is urging both teachers and students to strictly adhere to all coronavirus preventive measures, including social distancing in classrooms. Abdelbaghi says teachers should also get vaccinated against COVID-19. For VOA News, Viola Elias reports from Juba.
Speaking during the launch of Back to School campaign at Juba 1 Primary School yesterday, Hussein Abdelbaghi, the vice president in charge of the social services cluster, who also heads the National Task Force for COVID-19, said the government decided to reopen schools after seeing a significant drop in COVID-19 cases across the country. Abdelbaghi urged all teachers to get fully vaccinated against the virus.
We want all the school teachers to go to 5 vaccination centers in Juba, and we are going to increase the centers to more 10 centers across Juba and the states. So we want all our teachers to go to the vaccination centers to get COVID-19 green cards against coronavirus.
Abdelbaghi says in the coming months, the government will send COVID-19 committees to the schools to assess whether teachers have been adhering to the health ministry guidelines. General Education Minister Awu Deng says everyone has a responsibility to protect themselves from the pandemic. She warns the government will not hesitate to close schools again if students and teachers fail to adhere to COVID-19 preventative measures. Then calls on parents across the country to send their children back to school.
My appeal will be to the parents across the entire country that all the children in this country must report back to school, girls and boys together. This is our responsibility as parents to ensure that our children are encouraged, are supported to report back to school.
Deng assured teachers that the Education Ministry will improve working conditions for teachers, especially during the pandemic. 18-year-old student Randa Wani says she is excited to return to school and meet her teachers and classmates.
So I've missed very new things that I was supposed to get when I was in class. So, but through the reopening of schools, I'm quite sure I'm going to gain best. So I expected the new curriculum to be taken seriously, whereby it involves deeper learning. It is student-centered. So I expected that the new curriculum should be put in place, and also students has to be very serious about the curriculum because it is a benefit for their own.
George Kenyi, the head teacher at Juba Day Secondary School, says the lockdown affected both teachers and students. He says many boys drop out of schools to try to earn an income, while many girls either become pregnant or got married. He says teachers are excited to return to the classrooms and are ready to help students with their school work while practicing social distancing.
We were involved in the phase one, which we were preparing senior force. Recently, we were adhering to the COVID-19 Ministry of Health protocols, where social distancing is observed. People must have face masks. Also, we should have washing throughout. Although the washing here, we have a lot of challenges because it needs continuous pouring of water and then sanitizers, washing with the soaps. But with the meager resources that we have secured at least, so that it pushes us.
The South Sudan government closed all schools in March last year as one of several measures aimed at preventing the spread of the virus. South Sudan has registered 10,604 accumulative cases, 10,312 recoveries, and 115 deaths. Reporting for VOA News, I am Viola Elias in Juba.
The Biden administration says it is serious about global climate change, demonstrating its intent with a number of expensive U.S. projects across the African continent that aims to address climate change, poverty, and economic growth. VOA's Anita Powell reports from Johannesburg.
Climate change, poverty, and economic growth. These three indicators, the U.S. leadership says, are inextricably linked in the fight against environmental degradation in the developing world. But to make change happen, they need money. Enter the Millennium Challenge Corporation, an independent U.S. agency that gives out big grants to modernize infrastructure, address policy reforms, and promote growth in sectors that affect everyone in the economy, from the youngest child to the most ambitious entrepreneur. Acting CEO Mahmoud Ba explained in a call with journalists on Monday.
These grants are large, multi-year, and predictable. These are not loans, and they do not add to the country's debt burden. Our compacts tend to pair large investments in infrastructure in sectors like water, energy, agriculture, with institutional and policy reforms that ensure those investments have a significant and sustainable impact.
What that looks like on the ground, he explained, is this. Hundreds of millions of dollars poured into developing nations, most of them African, for hydropower projects, agricultural improvements, better access to electricity, and land reform. Neither Ba nor his deputy, Alexia Latortue, explicitly mentioned China, which is rapidly rolling out development across Africa through an ambitious infrastructure project known as the Belt and Road Initiative. Latortue sought to distinguish the American way of doing business.
MPC's three strategic priorities are inclusion and gender, catalyzing the private sector, and thirdly, climate. And if there's one takeaway I have for you, is that the three priorities are all about helping to achieve high-quality growth.
And she said the U.S. has proven this commitment.
So MCC recognizes that climate change is absolutely linked to poverty and economic growth. Indeed, MCC was an early leader in fighting climate change in developing countries, investing in the past 5 years alone over $1.5 billion, which is about 38% of our program of funds in climate-related activities. Our climate work covers adaptation, climate resilience, and mitigation.
To that end, she said, the corporation has made a new goal. More than half of their funds in the next 5 years will be used for climate change work around the world. Anita Powell, VOA News, Johannesburg.
You are listening to South Sudan in Focus on The Voice of America. Coming up, how is COVID-19 affecting press freedom across the world? Find out more after this break.
What do you think? People speak out on important questions. The question today:
how do you break bad news?
I break bad news looking at the person's mood as at that moment, whether to tell the person or not. And if you are telling the person, how would the person take it at that moment you are telling the person?
I think when you need to talk about something difficult, you just need to come right out and do it. So if it's bad news, I think just go right ahead and let it be known and say what you have to say and just figure out how to get over it.
Break bad news to people in a gradual process, because most of the times bad news come as a form of a shock to people. So you break it in a form of a gradual process by saying it in parables or using illustrations.
What do you think? A daily discussion of important questions from VOA.
You are listening to South Sudan in Focus on The Voice of America. And in our Tuesday health segment, we take a look at how COVID-19 has affected the media. Marking the Press Freedom Day on Monday, the United Nations Secretary General Antonio Guterres said the global challenges we face during the COVID-19 undermine the critical role of reliable, verified, and universally accessible information in saving lives, building strong, resilient societies, living through and documenting the pandemic brought a multitude of challenges, especially for women reporters, according to the Coalition for Women in Journalism. For VOA News, Mariama Diallo has that part of the story.
The lockdown that began in March 2020 were key strategies used around the world to slow the spread of the coronavirus pandemic. Kiran Nazish is a journalist and the founding director of the Coalition for Women in Journalism, a support organization for women journalists.
As you know, journalists have to be on the front line and they have to be out there to be able to report. I think in the early March, we saw this complete sort of huge challenge where women journalists, especially freelancers, were facing this challenge of finding a job to be able to do.
As the pandemic took a toll on lives, governments took drastic measures, including closing borders and imposing quarantines to protect medical systems from being strained. But some of them also tried to control the storyline, she says.
We saw this in Turkey, Lebanon, Egypt, some of these countries, China, Pakistan, some of these countries use the opportunity of COVID-19 into politicizing the issue and creating misinformation about journalists who had been trying to do their job.
How so? She explains.
This has happened in Pakistan. I'll give you an example of one of our members, Asma Shirazi. Whenever she is reporting on, you know, the spread of the virus, government inefficiencies, or whatever, you know, whatever the government should be doing and they aren't doing, she's targeted with misinformation campaigns. We have several other similar incidents where women journalists have been impeded after reporting on COVID-19 in particular.
In Turkey, journalist Ebru Kucukaydin was taken into custody after one of her coronavirus reports and later released. The Turkish government accused her of creating panic. Other journalists, Malaysia's award-winning Wan Noor Hayati and The Guardian's Cairo correspondent Ruth Michelson, faced charges or were expelled or harassed for their coverage of the pandemic, the coalition says. Last year, the International Federation of Journalists surveyed nearly 560 female reporters from 52 countries and found that stress increased for 77% since the pandemic began. Catherine Gicheru leads the Africa Women Journalism Project in Kenya, an initiative started by the International Center for Journalists. She's seen the negative effects the pandemic has had on some women journalists in countries where gender discrimination is widespread.
This, I have reports also from the fellows in Tanzania and in Uganda, as well as in Nigeria, is the fact that if you have to work from home, then you're the one who's also taking care of the family. And that's 2, 3, 4 times the job that she was, a woman journalist was previously doing. And that is across the board. So you have a mental anxiety, the stresses, the fears that everybody has, but much more for women, especially women journalists.
She also says women journalists have been hit with job losses.
It's a problem all over the world, but a lot of journalists have lost their jobs. The women, a lot of them, especially in Kenya, are either on contract terms or are freelancers. And the fact that they've lost this, they've either been laid off or they've been put on half pay, it means the situation has become even more difficult.
And she says it has had an impact on coverage of other women-related topics, including sexual health, obstetric fistula, and female genital mutilation. Mariama Diallo, VOA News, Washington.
This is a message in the public interest from VOA Africa.
Hello, I'm VOA health correspondent Linor Mudu. During this pandemic, the World Health Organization and Africa Centers for Disease Control say if you have a fever, a cough, or have trouble breathing, you should stay home and contact a healthcare facility. For more information, check with reliable sources such as the WHO and Africa CDC. And remember to listen to VOA for the latest health news.
That was a message in the public interest from VOA Africa.
U.S. President Joe Biden on Tuesday will update the country on how it's faring in the battle against COVID-19 and the effort to get more Americans vaccinated against the coronavirus. VOA's White House Bureau Chief Steve Hammond has this report.
The president, following remarks on Monday afternoon at a community college in Virginia, was asked by a reporter when the country will reach herd immunity, meaning when will a sufficient percentage of the population be immune to the coronavirus that causes COVID-19 because of previous exposure or inoculation.
There's a debate into what constitutes herd immunity. Is it 70% of the population? Is it 68%? Is it 81%?
No matter the precise percentage, Biden says he thinks by the end of the summer we'll be in a very different position. And what is critical now, according to the president, is for everyone to get vaccinated. Steve Herman, VOA News at the White House.
This is a message in the public interest from VOA Africa.
The World Health Organization and the Africa Center for Disease Control say there are no drugs approved to fight COVID-19. If you have tested positive, talk to a doctor before taking any medicines. For more information, check with reliable sources such as the WHO and Africa CDC. And remember to listen to VOA for the latest on COVID-19.
That was a message in the public interest from VOA Africa.
Still on COVID, Yemen has received 360,000 doses from the Global COVAX vaccine sharing scheme. Yet many Yemenis seem reluctant to get inoculated. Reuters' Megan Revelle reports.
In the disputed Yemeni city of Taiz, medical staff are working to inoculate the few who have shown interest in the COVID-19 vaccine. Yemen has received 360,000 doses from the Global COVAX sharing scheme, yet take-up has been limited due to religious belief, vaccine distrust, or because of the dangers of war. Raja Al-Maliki is the head of Yemen's health ministry in Taiz and said many locals believe the vaccine would break their fast during the holy month of Ramadan.
The total vaccine doses that arrived to Taiz province is 70,000 doses from a total 360,000 that arrived to Yemen. We started on April 21st, but the turnout has been very low, and it's very low because of two reasons. Firstly, the religious conviction that many people have that taking a shot in Ramadan breaks your fast. And this is a wrong religious fact that people believe and has led people away, including many healthcare workers.
There has been a dramatic spike in infections in Yemen this year, straining a health system already battered by war, economic collapse, and a shortfall in aid funding. The Iranian-aligned Houthi movement controls most of northern Yemen and parts of Taiz, and has been battling the Saudi-backed government since 2014. Tens of thousands of people have been killed, and millions rely on aid to survive. Checkpoints and snipers in the heavily militarized city make it hard for many to reach the main government-controlled hospital.
This is a message in the public interest from VOA Africa.
Hello, I'm VOA health correspondent Linor Moudou. The World Health Organization and Africa Centers for Disease Control say we all can help fight the global pandemic by frequently washing our hands or using hand sanitizers. For more information on protecting yourself and others, check with reliable sources such as the WHO and Africa CDC. And remember to listen to VOA for the latest on COVID-19.
That was a message in the public interest from VOA Africa.
Salsu
Sudan in Focus is now on WhatsApp. Send us a message on +1 202-630-8011. Tell us what's happening in your area or give us your feedback on the stories you hear on South Sudan in Focus. We look forward to hearing from you on WhatsApp. That number again, +1 202-630-8011.
This is a message in the public interest from VOA Africa.
The World Health Organization and U.S. Centers for Disease Control say coughing and sneezing can spread COVID-19. Physical distancing, staying at least 1 meter away from people outside your family, can protect everyone. For more information, check with reliable sources such as the WHO and Africa CDC. And remember to listen to VOA for the latest on COVID-19.
That was a message in the public interest from VOA Africa.
We'd love to hear what you think about this program. Our WhatsApp number is +1 202-630-8011. We'll air your comments every Friday. We now leave you with the song, Loso. We've been listening to some Madi song entitled Loso. I'm John Tanza. Thanks for being part of our evening. Remember to always wash your hands with soap and practice social distancing. Wear a mask when you're in public places to protect you and others from getting COVID-19. Do not escape from COVID-19 quarantine centers because there is no cure for coronavirus. Join us again tomorrow evening for another edition of South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America.
Calosandro, ay, 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 ay,